No time to waste this month, as I've got a very special guest with his choice of music. So, on with the show. So the phone rang, and a voice that I recognised said,
"As an officer of the law, I can tell you that this is the brightest and the best internet organ music program."
And after enduring an afternoon in the tropical biomes at the nearby Eden Project, it was a great pleasure to once again meet up with the fun-loving Mike Hall in the company of his new lady friend, Ronnie. Well, whenever we get together, conversation inevitably turns to the good old pioneering organ festival days of 4 decades ago, of which both Mike and I have some very fond memories.
I think what we have to look at, it's very difficult to appreciate today. If you look at the festivals of today, it was a completely different world. And I mean a different world, really, because 30 years ago, if we go back to, like, well,
Morecambe.
Morecambe, as we christened it, the late 1970s, the early 1980s. Some of these festivals, when we did the likes of Morecambe at Morecambe, we were getting about 2,000 people. I mean, it was just unbelievable. There was the big, I used to call it the ship theatre, which, if I remember right, was called the SS Berengaria.
That's right.
Which was this enormous theatre which could hold, I don't know, probably getting on for 2,000 people. What I do remember is that the stage electrics, dare I say, weren't that brilliant, because the sparks used to fly when you used to sort of get on the old levers and bring up lights and basically faders. They'd hum and they'd buzz and there'd be all sorts of things happening. But I tell you, the atmosphere that was created in that place was just unbelievable. When I think back to some of the players, a lot of those players are now no longer with us. But, I mean, they were just brilliant days. And, you know, driving up to somewhere like that, even that, you'd be driving by people in Ford Cortinas, in Morris Marinas. You know, you didn't see the cars of today. It was just a totally different world.
We always used to laugh about the switchboard at Morecambe, and we used to refer to it as Old Sparky.
I'm not surprised.
Well, let's sort of turn back the clock a bit, and because you're going to choose some of the records this month on the programme. Some of the people that you remember obviously are contained within the recordings that we're going to hear. Well, who are you going to start off with?
I've got to say, I mean, it's difficult to condense a few players, but there are so many brilliant players, great players. One name that will always stand very, very high in my mind is Brian Rodwell. Now, there are times when I used to always call Brian Dad. I used to say, "Hello, Dad." And there was just something about, he used to sort of try to look after me a little bit. When I was with Elka and Orla, and he would say, "Now, make sure you're not eating, and I'm going to advertise now, make sure you're not just having a Mars bar tonight. Go and get some fish and chips here, kid," as he used to say. You know, get a proper meal. Get yourself a proper meal. Don't go and live on a Mars bar or a packet of Jaffa cakes. But invariably I did. Yeah. You know, the car used to be full of Mars bar wrappers and Jaffa cakes and things like that. But certainly the most tremendous guy, he was a lovely guy and one of the most fantastic, he was a musician's musician, there is no doubt about it.
Well, they called him the governor, didn't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And what I always remember, he got the most massive hands. It was big span, like he could go to a chord an octave and a half in length, bum, and he'd get it, would hit the right notes. Yeah. He was just so, his hands were enormous, like go from C through to the next C and then way up to the next G, like an octave and a half. That's a big span to be able to do that.
Yeah.
the things in his mind, you know, his ideas were so totally different. Whether he was playing the latest in electronics, or whether he was playing like some of those classic recordings from, I don't know, the Odeon Paramount Leeds or something like that, where he was playing modern ideas, but on a theatre pipe organ, which hadn't really been done at that time. You would hear perhaps more traditional kind of theatre style. And then Brian came along and did something a lot more modern that we really hadn't heard before. And that appealed to me because it was like the rule books would say, you don't do that, you do it like this. But he said, no, I'm doing it my way, and I'm going to see what it goes like. And it, to me, it worked really well.
I don't know whether you were there, Mike, when we brought him over for Morecambe, but we actually managed, and to this day I don't know how we did it, but we managed to get a booking with Johnny Seng. I don't know whether you were there.
No, I don't think I was. I just don't understand where I was at that time. I just can't remember. I was obviously somewhere about here, there and everywhere, but I would certainly have remembered that. And I just don't know where I was.
With you talking about theatre organs and that, I figured to myself, well, Johnny Seng, was that somebody you'd actually met, or do you only know him via the recordings?
Just the recordings, just purely the recordings. I can't think. I may have met him in the States. It's surprising you'd meet quite a few people in the States and you don't really realise who you're talking to.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have heard him here. On some of these recordings, on that particular recording, on the Mundelein,
I mean,
it's just unbelievable. Just a tremendous, tremendous sound. if you could ever have an installation, a theatre pipe organ installation, that would be the kind of installation I would be quite happy to have a play on.
Yeah. Looking at one of your other choices, it's not unusual to quote the Tom Jones.
Indeed, yeah.
You've got Paul Carman. Well, you and Paul have known one another and worked together for quite some time, haven't you?
A number of years. Yeah. Paul and me we were working in a business which was basically involved in media, where we did to cut a long story short, what we did, we realised that there was a lot of people out there that had got all our organs, and they wanted to get the best out of their all our organ. And we thought, how could we do this? And we thought, well, we could perhaps help them with DVDs or being online. So we set up this thing called Key Play for You. And not only did we do it for certain all our organs, but also for keyboards, for people that owned a Tyros keyboard. And the idea was we would show you certain things. For example, we did one which was called Tricks of the Trade, because if either Paul or me were to do a show, the number of times you get people come up at the end of a show and say, "Hey, Mike, how did you do that bit at the end?" Or, "How did you get that bit when you went from one song to another?" And we said, "Well, you mean the modulation?" And what we did, this Tricks of the Trade DVD, was all about how the twiddly bits, or the endings, or the beginnings, the introductions, the modulation from one song to another, how you go from one key to another. We then expanded that to show, well, if you're going to play a modern instrument, like any of the instruments from any manufacturer today, the accuracy of the voicing is so good now, you have to think in a totally different way. Not like an organist, but like an orchestral person. You've got to try and think, well, you can't just play a saxophone how you would on an organ of 20 years ago. A saxophone now has to be played how a saxophonist would play it. The phrasing, the range of a saxophone, the way that the vibrato works in a saxophone. And it's the same with the strings, the piano. To get that accuracy requires a lot more than just the accuracy of the voice. And you've got to think like that instrument. And it was that kind of thing that we tried to put over in these DVDs. We did it both online and we did it on DVDs. And it was really successful. I mean, we've brought out a string of DVDs. I did one because my love, as you know, Alan, is drawbars. I love the sound of drawbars. A lot of people used to think, what are these funny little stick things that sort of just go in and out? Do they do anything? Well, of course they did. You know, there were sort of brown ones, which were sort of subharmonics, and you've got sort of the fundamentals and dissonance. And I did a book and a DVD that told the story of drawbars and how to get the best. It was basically, you know, drawbars for the beginner. Hmm. How they could get great sounds from drawbars without basically having to think and scratch their head and say, how do I do this? It was all spelt out in a very easy to understand way. And it was really good. It was very successful and I was really pleased. It was nice to be able to sit and write a book and see people. I've had people come up to me and they said, it really starts to make sense now. I can understand what you're talking about. I was thinking, thank goodness for that. You know, it was worthwhile sitting up until 3 o'clock every morning writing a book on drawbars.
All right, well, let's have a listen to Paul Carman. Thank you. That was Paul Carman. Back now then to theatre organs. Who floats your boat theatre organ-wise apart from Johnny Seng?
Well, George Wright, yeah. I think, let's face it, you know, there's when I go back, certainly down memory lane, the name George Wright, I can remember some of those old LPs that I had years and years ago with him playing things like Slaughter on 10th Avenue. Just unbelievable. I mean, the precision, the accuracy, the way he came about, his approach to playing a theatre organ was so totally different to anything else I'd heard from America at that time.
I think, in fairness, everybody owes that thing about theatre organ recordings and hi-fi recordings of organs literally to George Wright.
I think they do, yeah, because, as you rightly say, I can remember back in the 1960s when hi-fi was really starting to take off.
Woofers and tweeters.
You've got all your woofers and your tweeters and you've got all of the sort of the Ferrograph and Revox tape recorders and Garrard turntables with SME. We're doing a good advert for all these manufacturers.
Trouble is they're not with us anymore. Yeah.
And you have these enormous speakers in the corner and you could get you'd either have trains sort of going across the room from left to the right-hand speaker. Or the other ideal thing was, of course, theatre organs, theatre pipe organs, where you'd got drums and cymbals and xylophones and glockenspiels and things like that. And I think the likes of George Wright was very quick to pick up on the fact that he'd got another market straight away. Not only was the organ enthusiast going to perhaps buy his LPs, but also the hi-fi enthusiast who could have all their super duper hi-fi in their lounge, but with a four manual 36 rank Wurlitzer playing, in incredible volume through there. In those days, no doubt 20 watt per channel valve amplifier that sounded like a 200 watt transistor one of today.
Thank you.
But of course, at the other end of the scale, I mean, George's organ's normally all these four manual, 50 rank jobs in most cases, or of course his own Philharmonic organ at home. But you've chosen one here with one of the smallest Wurlitzers in existence, played by Jerry Mendelssohn.
Jerry Mendelssohn, and I just love this guy's playing. I again stumbled over this LP, years and years, probably back in the 70s now. And I heard this LP, and initially I looked at it and thought, this is a two-manual, seven-rank Wurlitzer. And I thought, yeah, okay, that'll be nice. And I heard it and I thought, wow, this is just something. It doesn't give you the... It breathes, sort of, it's alive. It's got so much going for it. It really wants you to like this thing. It sort of says, it's like a little puppy. Look at me, I'm really different. And it's got so much... it's alive with sound and power and enthusiasm. And the great thing about it is that when you get somebody like Jerry Mendelssohn that obviously can get the very best out of that organ and then couple it with the theatre that it's housed in, this million-dollar railway theatre. I think it's actually an art centre now. It's not called that, but it's not a massive theatre, but it's fairly big. And it has these incredible acoustics, which really make such a difference. And the thing to me just sounds $1 million.
All right, let's have a listen to a little bit of Jerry Mendelssohn. Back again, Mike, to electronics. Chris Anderson's a name which I first came to hear about not that long ago, but he's got one CD out here called Evolution Call, and I really went on about it at the time when I first heard it. How did you first come to hear about it?
Well, I first met up with Chris Anderson at one of the NAMM shows in America when we were doing some Elker and Aller stuff over there years and years ago. When he was really young, and I suppose I was as well, probably.
We all were.
Well, no doubt, yeah. And he was just exhibiting there playing, I think it was a Hammond B3000, so that will give you an idea of how long ago it was. And I picked up an LP, and I thought, oh, it's really good. And it just blew me away. I mean, it was so, it was fresh, it was different, and it was just... It sort of it it ticked all the boxes for me at that time. And it's the name I've remembered all these years. I just like his playing.
Well, it's one LP that I don't have. The only one I have got of Chris's, and that's a CD, is the one that was produced a couple of years or so ago now. So let's have a listen to him playing Caravan.
Okay.
Let's go back to the days, Mike, when you were heavily involved with the Elka range of instruments, and you made quite a number of recordings for them in the
Oh, it was happy days. I mean, it was the heyday of the electronic organ as well. We have to think, you know, how things were so totally different, and they were different back in those days. A lot of people often say to me, Elka, what does it mean anything? Well, actually, it does, because it actually stood for Electronic Keyboards of Ancona, the EL Keyboards A from Ancona, and basically the factory all those years ago was in a little Italian town called Castelfidardo, which is just a few miles away from Ancona, and in fact almost the entire Italian music industry was in that area. And when I first went over to Italy, It was amazing, because everybody knew each other. And we'd go to Pippo's restaurant, and you'd see people from other manufacturers there. It was just fantastic. And when I first went to the Elka and the Orla factories, which were right next door to each other, it was just such a friendly, admittedly very professional environment, but they just had this vision of what they wanted. And to be involved with Elka and Orla back in those days was just fantastic. It was just brilliant. It really was.
So let's take a track from one of the well, was it back in the days of cassettes, this, wasn't it, Mike?
Well, yeah, you should see some of my older ones there on wax cylinder.
You can't get the needles for them,
it's
no, that's
difficult.
The trouble,
yeah. I've still got a few 78 ones. Well, I've still got some cassettes somewhere. I got to tell you, Alan, it's not that long ago, somebody came up to me and said, have you got any cassettes? So I thought, oh, that'll be all right. I'll dig out some cassettes then. So I went to the next show. I said, I've got some cassettes. And I got just blank looks from everybody. He said, what? What's he on with? Cassettes. He's brought some cassettes to sell. So I thought, yeah, perhaps better put the cassettes away again. So they've gone back in a suitcase. Yeah.
Well, from an early cassette, this is from his Master's Choice.
Oh, this is from a CD.
Oh, is it from a CD?
We did it on a cassette as well, because there's still a lot of people.
It must have been in that crossover period CDs.
I always remember, because, we both are into sort of technology. We like our hi-fis and stuff like that. I can remember when the CD was launched back in 1983, but the idea of getting an organ album on a CD back then, well, you may as well forget it. You may as well say, I'm going to fly to the moon, because it just wasn't possible. It was going to cost too much money. And so a few years down the line, when it did become available, you could be able to get a manufacturer involved. And I was involved with a company then, Audicord, and they did this particular album, and we called it His Master's Choice. And I used this at the time, this fabulous new Elka organ, that was very futuristic in its sound, very, very cutting-edge technology, but it looked $1 million because it was so totally different. It's an organ called the C1000, and we did it in a portable and as a home version. It was just an amazing machine. I have to say, though, that I had a portable. Perhaps I should call it transportable, but... It was heavy, put it that way, but it was still a lovely organ. And this was a track that I really enjoyed playing on that organ, which I believe is called Georgie Girl.
Georgie Girl. Thank you. Well, I don't suppose any organ festival back in those days might would have been anything without the great Jerry Allen, would it?
No, I think Jerry brought a certain something to all players at that time, but certainly in the festivals and the organ concerts that were around back in the 60s and the 70s, the name Jerry Allen is just synonymous with the world of the electronic organ. Of course, a lot of people will still remember Jerry Allen from the Lunchbox days, with Lunchbox on the television, with Noel Gordon and his early Larry shows that he would take around the UK. I was my involvement, how I got involved with Jerry, was that how long have you got? Well, what happened was that when I used to play at the Granada Theatre in Grantham on the big Compton Cinema organ, we had Mr. Blackpool. He was coming down. Reginald Dixon was coming to do a show, and I was there on the Compton and just tinkering around when he came down, and we introduced ourselves and got talking, and I was only about 15, 16 or whatever, and I said, do you want to have some of your settings, your registrations, and I'll take the back off the console of the organ and we'll set it all up for you. And we chatted, and he seemed a really nice guy, and he said, you know, if I were you, I'd look to the electronic organ world. That's where the future is, he said, because, you know, cinema organs, they're not going to be around in cinemas for not a lot longer, really. He said, I tell you, you want to see, he said, I'm going to give you a phone number, and I want you to ring him and tell the guy, I've said, ring you. And basically, Reg Dixon said, the person I want you to ring up is Jerry Allen. And I said, oh, right, OK. So I got this bit of paper with Jerry Allen's phone number, and I told my mum and dad, and they said, oh, right. So we rang up Jerry, and he said, oh, well, yeah, come and see us. Well, my mum and dad, they immediately remembered Lunchbox and the television and said, right, you better go and get your hair cut. You can't go down there looking like that. And so got all sort of tartied up, if you want to call it that. And down we went to Watford in those days. And I was going to meet up with Jerry at 2 o'clock at his shop, where he sold Lowry organs. And arrived about 2:55, went into the shop. And they said, oh, Jerry will be here. He knows you're coming. He'll be here in a minute. So I'm there, very smart, hair all not out of place. It was perfect. And about 2:05, the biggest scruff in the world walked in. His hair was all over the place. He got an old T-shirt on. He got a baggy old pair of corduroy trousers on. This was the great Jerry Allen. And he said, hi, Mike, I'm Jerry. And, you know, we just chatted and talked. And basically, it was like I was having like a, would I be suitable to be able to sort of to see whether or not he wanted to take me on to teach. And it wasn't just about music, it was about everything, you know, stage presentation. He was just unbelievable, one of the nicest guys you could ever possibly wish to meet up with. And when I used to go for lessons, technically, it was a 2-hour lesson, but I used to get there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was still there at 9 o'clock at night. It was just, I used to stand around, and he would say, well, look at this. And he would play, and you could look over his shoulder. And it was that I remembered when Paul Carman and me were doing the DVDs, that when I would be operating the cameras, I did the camera like looking over your shoulder so that people could see. And that's how I used to learn a lot from what Jerry was doing. Yes, he would write me out a piece of music. I remember he's written me out, Our Love Is Here to Stay, The Lady Is a Tramp. And it was the speed that he could write the music out that was just unbelievable. Such a tremendous musician, lovely guy, great Larry exponent. And certainly in those days when the electronic organ was really taking off, it was getting very popular. When you think about it, in the 60s and in the early 70s, it was Larry, Hammond organs were the two big names that people will often remember. And he was certainly a name that brought the name Larry to the forefront.
Well, let's have a listen then to Jerry. This is your last choice in the programme today, Mike, for which many, many thanks. And it's going to be Moon River.
Moon River.
Thanks very much indeed for giving up part of your little holiday down in Cornwall to call
in
and see us.
You know, Alan, it's always a pleasure to come and see you. And I love to come down to Cornwall. So it's been an absolute pleasure for me to be able to talk about some of my, you know, favourite players. We've only scratched the surface. You know, I've not got onto my Keith Emerson sort of that totally different. People wouldn't perhaps believe of that. It's a totally different kind of thing with my sort of progressive rock scene and what have you, and Dave Grew scene from the jazz scene. But it's nice to be able to talk about and hear some of the good old organ sounds of the organ world.
Well, thanks, Mike, anyway, for all your memories about Morecambe or Morecambe,
yes.
And yeah. Poggy Pogson. And I mean, we haven't even gone into Poggy Pogson.
We haven't even talked about Poggy Pogson.
Half of the people at Morecambe, I don't think, believe Poggy Pogson
even
existed.
No, yeah. Well, perhaps another time.
Another time, Mike. Thanks very much indeed.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks a lot.
Last month I played this track by Don Baker, indicating that the only sleeve note information about it was the single word intermezzo. I felt it was a theme tune and used in a very famous film, but suggested that if anyone knew what the real title was, would they let me know. Three people did, namely Roy Handley, David Small and Barry Palmer, and they were all of one accord inasmuch as it was the theme from Escape to Happiness, starring Ingrid Bergman and Leslie Howard. Roy Handley went on to say that it was the Austrian composer Heinz Provost who wrote the intermezzo, which he originally called Souvenir of Vienna, and it was the winning entry in a music competition set for the 1936 version of the film itself. So, thanks once again, guys. I also promised you last month to feature a track from a new CD titled The Man on the Clapham Organ, featuring some live in-concert recordings by Brian Rodwell at the famous Granada Clapham Wurlitzer. This latest OK Roland production CD is now available. Full track and ordering details are, of course, up on the MSS Organ First Radio Show web pages. And, with Christmas approaching, you might like to ask Santa Claus to buy you a copy. Thank you. Tea for Two, a special arrangement by Brian Rodwell and taken from a very interesting new CD titled The Man on the Clapham Organ, comprising of live recordings from a 1978 appearance at the Granada Clapham Cinema. Well, the show this month was topped and tailed by the late and great Brian Rodwell, and sandwiched in between, I hope you enjoyed the memories of good friend Mike Hall. I'll be here again next month with my Christmas edition, in which I'll be including at least one new seasonal offering. And so, from Alan Ashton, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Organ First Radio, a Penelador production presented by Alan Ashton with technical direction by Ian King.